And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, and Oscar for your listening pleasure. We are going with the Christmas spirit today. We were teasing that we were going to do some Christmas movies throughout December, and we're going to start our first one today with The Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a movie event review for you. For that, I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike, and I am so happy this holds up. Otherwise, my childhood meant nothing.
You did say that going in, that you were kind of fearful about whether or not this would actually be a decent movie still in this day and age.
Very happy.
I think it does better than certain other Christmas. Like, we'd both talked about it. A Christmas Story, or Christmas... What's the one where I'll just shoot your
Ralphie.
Eye out?
Yeah, Ralphie's got its moments.
Well. Yeah.
It's got its moments.
It doesn't seem to be as...
I think people have watched that 100,000 times, though, a piece. Even if unwillingly they've watched
TNT
it.
TNT doesn't help when it has it on that 24-hour loop every Christmas.
And it's just like the default what's on TV at your family Christmas party.
Right.
Whenever there's a lull in an NBA or NFL game or whatever. So
I don't talk to those types of people that don't watch it.
Well, that because we don't talk to them, we go off into the room with the TV and the few weird cousins that we rarely speak to, and we just watch a Christmas Story together.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, we're doing Muppets Christmas Carol.
I am
today.
The weird cousin.
And like we said, we're going to try to do a couple Christmas movies throughout the season. We didn't get a chance to do this last year, but we're still going to be mixing in our Oscars, usual Oscar stuff along the way, our previews, reviews, retrospectives, OSPs.
Oh, it's a loaded month. I just did the schedule. It is jam-packed.
Yeah, it is. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff, and we'll be coming to you multiple times a week per usual, but let's start Muppets Christmas Carol, the Michael Caine. I had never seen this movie before. I've never seen it. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but this is the first time I actually sat down at the age of 31 and watched this movie. It was fun.
Good.
It was a fun movie. Yeah, it's like, who doesn't like the Muppets, though? You know, it's like, it's cheating, just like anything else I say. It's like...
You're right. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
This is Muppets, Christmas Carol, Michael Caine,
yes.
His first song and dance number.
Yeah,
so.
he was actually pretty good. I wonder if he was a Broadway star. Well, let's get into it. Mike's going to start us with cast and crew.
I have answers. Directed by Brian Henson, son of the legendary Jim Henson, creator of The Muppets and director of all those Muppet movies from the 70s, The Muppet Show, of course. Brian Henson would go on to direct Muppet Treasure Island, The Happy Time Murders recently, a bunch of Muppet and non-puppet based television over the years. He's had a long career. Muppet Christmas Carol was written by Jerry Jewell off of the Charles Dickens novel, of course. And it was fun to watch him in interviews talk about how whenever he ran into a problem with the script, he can just kind of go back to the Christmas Carol. I mean,
yeah, it can't be that difficult to like put this one together.
Yeah. He's like, who's going to play the ghost of Christmas Past? Should it be Gonzo? Should it be this guy? No, okay, we'll go with this. So that was kind of the choice decision making process for them. But I think everybody was thrilled with how close he was able to stick with the Dickens story, with the Muppets of all things, with a children's movie of this rating. I mean, this is a rated G film,
yeah.
And it's got some scary aspects to it, some horror film
aspects
to it.
I was surprised by that, yeah.
They kind of, you know, nullified some of them. I'll talk about that, but it was fun to watch how they adapted this. The Muppets movie, 81's The Great Muppet Caper, 46 episodes of Fraggle Rock, 14 episodes of Sesame Street, Muppet Treasure Island, and Muppets from Space. That's all Jerry Jewell. He has been the writer of the Muppets for a long time
worker for the Henson family.
The great Michael Caine plays Ebenezer Scrooge. Caine is, of course, known from Alfie, Gambit, The Italian Job, Get Carter, Sleuth. And, of course, The Italian Job, Get Carter, and Sleuth were all remade, I believe, with Michael Caine in another role in each of those films.
Okay.
So it was fascinating to watch his kind of career have both ends of the spectrum with the same stories. Educating Rita, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, of course, our favorite Austin Powers and Gold member, because we're, what did you say, garbage TV?
Yes.
Garbage watchers?
Garbage people, yes.
Garbage people. The Garbage People podcast. Yes. The Quiet American, Christopher Nolan's three Batman films as Alfred, not Alfie. That would have been interesting if somebody called him Alfie at one point. Missed opportunity for a golden Easter egg there.
I think you're reaching for a joke there, but all right.
I'm reaching for a joke because it would have been it would have made me laugh.
Fair
God
enough.
Damn it. If he was like, if Alfred had just a bird in the other room.
Gonna have to just knock that the rating for Dark Knight down a couple pegs then, I guess.
He always called the girls birds and Alfie, Mike. That's a joke for 19 late 70s movie aficionados. and only them. Children of Men and Youth.
You're doing God's work out here.
Children of Men and Youth, two recent Michael Caine movies I've seen him in. He's won 2 Oscars for The Cider House Rules and Hannah and Her Sisters, amongst 6 total nominations. I've mentioned all the noms that he was in that big list there. He won 3 Golden Globes, 2 BAFTAs, including a Fellowship Award, and he was also nominated for 3 Emmys. Playing many of your favorite Muppets, we have longtime Muppet performers. We have David Goles, we have Stephen Whitmire, Jerry Nelson, David Rudman, Don Austin, Jessica Fox, and Robert Tigner. Underworld and Lockstock, Stephen McIntosh is probably the only other, you know, yeah, real person, known actor in this. He plays Fred Scrooge. But it's also fun to see Kermit the Frog, Gonzo, Foggy. I was going to call him Foggy.
That's what Fozzie, he can't remember things.
And
Foggy Bear.
Miss Piggy, they all get their own IMDb credits. So IMDb having some Muppet fun.
That's awesome.
Story inception and production notes. Number one, go watch the YouTube making of featurettes. There's 2 of them. One's 10 minutes. The other one's 20 minutes. They're very fun. First of all, I love how the making of featurette, the 10-minute one, I think from the video DVD release, interviews all the Muppets like they're regular actors.
Yes.
So you have Kermit and Miss Piggy.
I think that's important because I always get like taken aback when anytime you see these behind the scenes stuff and the Muppets, the puppets aren't actually like alive.
Right.
I don't like seeing them just lay there as cloth.
It's very, very boring to listen to Brian Henson.
Right. Like, I don't want to hear you.
The puppeteers. Like, the puppeteers are just, yeah, they're not great interviews, unfortunately. But Miss Piggy said at one point, "The Muppet Christmas Carol was an incredible, incredible movie, but it could have been better if my part had been bigger."
It's not terrible.
I've done worse impressions on the podcast. Michael Caine said that he never looked at a puppeteer. I thought that was fascinating. He said, even by accident, he's like, "I can't look at these guys. I just focus in on those Muppets."
Yeah, because Michael Caine sees Muppets as the same way I do. You just want to see them as alive and real, actual animated beings.
Live in the dream, Michael Caine. The movie is the first time Michael Caine has ever sung a musical number.
There you go.
Either on stage or screen.
Wow.
So if Rob Brydon does not parody this in a Trip movie, I don't know what to do. Because he does the Michael Caine impression impeccably every Trip movie. Trip to Spain, Trip to Italy, Trip to, or just a Trip. And he needs to do a Trip to Connecticut. Parody Michael Caine. We need to be on set somehow and watch that.
I
want to see
all
the outtakes.
That. Yes.
It's adorable to see them talk about green screen technology for like the first time in a
right.
featurette. And they used it quite a bit here. So again, Disney on the cutting edge. 1992 with visual effects. The Muppet Christmas Carol is dedicated to Jim Henson and Richard Hunt, legendary in the Muppets franchise over the years. They both died either before in 1990 with Jim Henson or during production with Richard Hunt. So this was a big movie. Brian Henson talked about it quite a bit. Big movie for the Muppets cast and crew. A lot of the same people, like I said, because it was the first Muppet anything really after Jim Henson's death. And talent agent Bill Haber approached son Brian about adapting A Christmas Carol with Muppets. Essentially, he did this after he sold the idea already to ABC as a TV movie.
He sold the Muppets doing A Christmas Carol.
Muppets
then he
doing
went to
A
the
Christmas
Henson family.
And then he went to Brian Henson.
Listen, so. Brian, you got to get me out of a jam here.
Right. So Jerry Jewell was on board, and it was funny because he wanted Gonzo to be Charles Dickens at the end of it all because Gonzo would be the most unlikely Charles Dickens.
I guess. I saw that in the Wikipedia page, and I was like, really? Would he be, would he be more unlikely a Charles Dickens than say,
Animal?
Like, than Animal?
Or Beaker, or yeah.
Oh, I love Beaker. Yeah.
Anyway, Rizzo the Rat was then ingeniously added to as Gonzo's comic relief. There's going to be some tongue twisters with the word Gonzo in there today, and also his Greek chorus. I laughed at Rizzo the Rat throughout the
perfect
interviews throughout the movie. Yes, it worked very well. They originally wrote in established Muppet characters to play the Ghosts of Christmas, but they scrapped this idea in favor of new Muppets, in favor of Muppets that can more characterize these ghosts better. To, I guess, you know, to make the ghosts a little scary on the one hand, but they were going to have The Ghost of Christmas Future, Mike, which is just a shrouded black hole for a face. Yeah, looks like
Grim Reaper.
Grim Reaper, and with Gonzo's nose sticking out. But they did not awesome. Do that, but that would have been a great joke.
That would have been hilarious.
But it kind of would have taken us out of the movie a little bit. Yeah. They originally wanted George Carlin to play Scrooge in this. That would have been a different movie. But Henson would ultimately go on his own and offer this part to Michael Caine, who, in the quote of the day, famously said that I am going to play this movie like I am working with the Royal Shakespeare Company. And Brian Henson said that was a huge decision by Michael Caine because he's very generous. He can let all the Muppets be funny. He wouldn't try to outstage the Muppets, right? Upstage the Muppets. And basically, he would just put on this incredible dramatic performance at the center of this movie to where it makes everything else more funny, but it also kind of grounds the story, the Charles Dickens story, at the very center of it. So I love
that. He's really being an antagonist in this for before Scrooge turns. Like, he is a nasty
there
guy.
We're going to talk about it. There's Oscar real scenes for Mr. Caine in this. Production took place at Shepperton Studios in England, Michael, and they basically ripped out all the floors. If you watch the making of featurettes, it's like Michael Caine running along the street, and then there's like 12 Muppet guys, you know, about 5 feet below, running with him in the ripped out floor next to him. And it's just like two runways and they're both following each other. And then, of course, Michael Caine staring at like seething and foaming at the mouth, yelling at the Muppets. So I loved watching those making of.
That's amazing.
Snippets there. London's buildings were constructed by handmade sets and they were made in scale. All right, with some kind of optical illusion, perspective, I think is the correct
term. Force perspective, force like they did with the Lord of the Rings.
Yes, force perspective. They were made smaller and smaller and smaller throughout the end of the set. There's actually a shot here that Brian Henson talked about, one crane shot where they lift the crane above it all, and it kind of, you can tell that these other buildings were like really too small.
Whoopsies.
But he left it in, and I didn't notice it.
No, I didn't see it either.
So a lot of movie magic going on there. Mike, you got some specs.
Muppets Christmas Carol specs. Mike already told you some of these, written by Charles Dickens, who did the novel, obviously. Jerry Jewell, long time writer for the Henson family, did the screenplay for this. Directed by Brian Henson, son of Jim Henson, creator of the Muppets, who himself is also a triple threat, being an actor, producer, and director, mostly of Henson-related properties.
Yeah,
he laughs a lot. Movie had its debut December 11th, 1992. It's an 86-minute runtime on a G rating, produced by Jim Henson Productions and the Walt Disney Company, though the complete sale of the Muppets and Henson properties to Disney wouldn't occur until some 12 years later in 2004. Buena Vista, obviously an arm of Disney there, had the distribution rights. Miles Goodman did the music and John Fenner the cinematography. Film was only in theaters for 4 weeks, but was in 2,000 plus theaters for majority of that run. $12 million production budget ended up yielding $27.2 million total, meaning it was likely a money loser for the enterprise at the time. But
that was domestically.
It must have made a profit, because this has become like such a cultural and holiday.
How many re-releases on DVD and Blu-ray and VHS?
Television rights, yeah.
It must have cleaned up on video. Overall.
7.7 IMDb rating on some 40,000 plus reviews. Similarly, it carries a 74% Rotten Tomato rating, having it fall just shy of being labeled certified fresh there. Only 43 critic reviews, though, with an average score of 6.5 out of 10. 85% audience score, though. That's probably the one you want to be more impressed with, on 122,000 plus reviews.
So 160,000 votes. They all saw the movie.
It's
they
about
all
an eight.
Bought the they all bought the DVD or whatever. Yeah.
And I'm sure it did fine on the back end there. Average audience rating was 3.4 out of 5. A Metascore of 64, because for some reason the city of Chicago must have hated this movie. The two low Metascores are a 30 and a 25. The former from Jonathan Rosenbaum of the Chicago Reader, who in 92 called this movie, quote, the dullest and least successful adaptation of the Christmas Chestnut I've ever seen. The latter score from Dave Kerr of the Chicago Tribune, saying in 92 it was a, quote, talky, plodding film that seems likely to bore children and adults in equal measure.
Now, did they end their reviews with humbug? Or
happy holidays.
They ended the review with, if they want to die, then they better do it and decrease the surplus population. That's how they ended their reviews.
The devil is a lie. Happiness is a facade. Nothing is real. Yeah. Yeah, those are the specs there for the Muppets. So, again, Odd that two Chicago newspapers despise this movie, had the lowest scores by far, ruining its Metascore. But like you said, and like we said, it's become this holiday cult classic, and everybody loves it. And I think I'm the last person on Earth to have never seen it.
Well, let's shout them out on Twitter or something. Maybe they'll listen to our review, and then they'll
turn into Act 3 Scrooge. I was actually thinking about reaching out to them, and if by any chance they listen, I would love to hear an updated take on if they still feel that way.
All right, here's the plot premise. The Muppet characters tell their version of the classic tale of an old and bitter miser's redemption on Christmas Eve. So, of course, the old chestnut.
They could have said it's a Christmas carol.
With Muppets. Yeah. Mike, your expectations, I kind of stated mine already. I wondered if it would hold up, hoped it would, and I'm thrilled it does.
Michael? I can't imagine a combination, even in 92, before Disney didn't own the Henson properties, of the Muppets and Walt Disney making a Christmas movie that fails.
Right.
I couldn't picture that. So I, and especially after seeing the scores and everything going into it, I just expected pretty much exactly what I got.
The Disney logo and Christmas in the title is enough to sell a couple million DVDs, VHS.
Your inner child is already like, yay! Right.
A Disney Christmas video, I'm buying it at the grocery store. Everybody said
exactly.
That
so, I mean, yes, this is pretty much exactly what I expected. But you're right in terms of will it hold up, where this is somewhat 26 years later now, and this is still a great retelling of this story.
You enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's get into some production values. We'll do our Oscar thing over here. The production design, the sets, which I've just learned is what production design is. I had a Lion King gaffe.
Well, you'll be all set next time we do an Oscars podcast.
I'll be good now. I'm ready. They're my favorite part, and the fact that you have the forced perspective. I love that they look like Muppet homes. You know, they look like foam houses.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
They're like bordering on cartoonish, but they're still real enough. And that's kind of what the magic of, it is Disney usually, but Henson did it here too. You got to blend these worlds where humans and Muppets are just hanging out in concert with one another. They're all just using the same utilities and what's available to them. So you kind of have to walk that tightrope between realism and actual like craziness.
Yes.
And they do it wonderfully.
And it's a perfect mixture because, you know, yes, they're in Manhattan in their other movies, right?
Right.
But here you have them in old England, but old England looks like a happier place.
Right. It looks like a postcard.
And even still, they do show a lot of poverty. They do show a lot of, you know, griminess. And that's true to the story and to the themes in there. I mean, this was one of the harsher issue stories of the day about Victorian excess and about how the poor was neglected. It's more of a song for the poor than it was anything else. I learned this back in my junior English class. And
of course you watched
my
this
teacher
in class.
Is very, very we didn't watch this one. We watched the George C. Scott version.
I would hope
version.
Not this one. Yeah.
We watched this in my 7th grade English class, I will say.
I hate your school system.
We watched Muppet Christmas Carol. I'm sorry, 6th grade. Sixth
I was
grade.
Failing biology.
Mrs. Crumb showed us this one. She liked it. Anyway, we have hundreds of Muppets in this set. So talk about world building.
Yes.
And how many Muppets they have to showcase here. Just in that first song alone, there's like literally 100 Muppets on screen. It's wonderful.
And there's some that you don't know, some obviously the old standbys that you do. There were some that I don't remember seeing, some heavy, like was Fozzie in this?
Fozzie was Fezziwink.
Yes. I'm sorry, of course. He was in a disguise. That's why I don't remember him.
So Kermit looking over the town, I mean, with the moon overhead. So it's not just the buildings that were wonderfully constructed, but like the horizons, and they did some green screen. They did the effects to get into those now. I thought they looked great with the hazy ghosts and the transparent.
It's funny to see effects in that there was only one. If you go back and look at the Oscars from 1993, this came out in 92, obviously, the 93 award show. You go back and look at the Oscars, and there's just one category that says best visual effects, because that's all there was at the time. There wasn't, like, graphics. There wasn't VFX. There was just, like, what can you do? Usually practical effects to rule the day. But, yeah, as far as being on the cutting edge of technology for 92, again, this holds up visually today. So
really
a
does.
Lot of stuff they did was practical use, and you could tell it was all done on the stage in front of you. But for what they did rely on with green screens and stuff, I couldn't really tell a difference.
Green screen, superimposition. I think they use some old school effects there, like you said, especially with the ghosts, with the Marleys. Right. With, I think the new ghost was more CGI green screen with the ghost of Christmas Past.
Yeah, the baby girl ghost. You could see that probably. But as far as like the introduction, they still used her with some any other ghost with practical effects. The Christmas Future was introduced. They just fogged out the entire set they were in that had to be real, true to life. I mean, you could see it actually engulfing Michael Caine. So.
It looked like real snow. It looked like real fog. It was real fog. It all looked real. I mean, in a way that fit with this little world here. And then, of course, Mike, in terms of practical effects, there's all the puppetry, which is a whole another ocean of effects.
You know what's amazing is that I noticed when watching Gonzo one time, like his eyelids move.
Right.
Like to show like seriousness and like optimism and hopefulness. And like,
right.
How many different controls must be inside one of those Muppets?
It must be, they must have certain level of control, but just the way they tilt their heads sometimes, right. They look down, they look
they're
up.
They're real people.
They know how to emit emotions just with the angle of these Muppets sometimes. But in terms of the editing, I thought it was fascinating. These Muppets don't blink. So if you linger on a shot for too long, the Muppet probably looks crazy.
Freak out, yeah.
But the editing is relatively high-paced. I mean, it's only an 86-minute movie, so you don't linger. I'm like, wait, but Gonzo doesn't have eyelids, but Gonzo's only in shots for like 3 seconds at a time. So it really works, and they know what they're doing.
And also, as far as editing, the pacing of this movie was really quick because I think this story could have been told in like 50 minutes.
Right.
The Michael Caine stuff. But there's long shots of Gonzo and Ratso like talking to each other and setting the stage and doing the exposition dumps that like that's where the filler of this comes in. So it's a nice split. You're actually taking the seriousness of how overbearingly evil Michael Caine is.
Sure.
And it's broken up by Ratso and Gonzo being hilarious.
And that's my major point on the sound effects and score and all the musical numbers too, because the horror elements, which can be done in a very horrifying way with other properties that we've seen, the Robert Zemeckis, Jim Carrey version. That was kind of scary.
George C. Scott, yeah.
Of course.
Anytime you get to the Christmas Future, they actually had a scare that's typically in every other, like when revealing the ghost of Christmas Future, that wasn't in this one.
Right.
So like they towed the line of horror. There's definitely horror elements in this.
Yeah, but there's like a big gulp for Michael Caine. So he really tips off. Like in that scene,
right.
He just goes, you know, and the music is building up. So they're letting the kids know, especially when the Marleys.
Kids.
Well, true, but they won't like scare them.
Not going to send them running for the hills.
Right.
No.
It won't scare them.
But
they'll keep watching. And the Marleys pop up and they're laughing and they're the same heckling. Marley,
Statler and Waldorf. I love them.
From the balcony.
Can I tell you, like, growing up, my favorite Muppet was always Meeper. And, like, as I've grown older and gotten more bitter, all I want is Statler and Waldorf.
We are Statler and Waldorf.
It's honestly. Great to be doing anything again.
So, yeah, if they made it silent and then a big jump scare, then you can do that, too, with this property. But, of course, you also have Rizzo and Gonzo every time, like, Scrooge is about to walk around his apartment and be afraid. You have Rizzo and Gonzo doing goofy stuff. And you also have, you know, 4-minute interludes of beautiful Christmas music songs by the Muppets making jokes half the time.
But they do let the horror bit, like Rizzo and Gonzo to explain straight out, like, we're going to lay out for a little bit. You'll see us later. And that's when the gross of Christmas Future stuff happens. They're not there. They're not around when the creepiness
true.
Is building.
So you have a niece and nephew that are, what, 6 and 4? How old are they?
That's a great question. Six and two, I think. 5 and 2. Yeah.
Okay, so 5 and 2. Okay, so would you show this to them? Like, could they handle it? I'm curious.
Well, the 2-year-old literally fears nothing. So her, yeah.
Oh, okay, wow, that was a surprising answer.
Yeah. The six-year-old, yeah, you can show this to kids. I think without question, as long as you're there watching, it's not enough to freak out a little kid. I don't think.
Good. So performances, Michael Caine does play it straight here. He does play it like he's acting to the Royal Shakespeare Company from that quote. I'm seeing Daniel Day-Lewis facial expressions. I'm seeing Oscar real stuff where he's crying
but it borders on over the top, doesn't it? Because of the absurdity and totality.
Yeah, but he is very stoic throughout this movie,
he
too.
Is.
Like, he picks his spots is what I'm going to say. Yeah, no, he goes over the top at times, but he also picks his spots. And like Jim Brian Henson said, he's not going for comedy at all.
No, never.
And if anything, he's almost like a little darker than other Scrooges because he gets like crazy.
He is.
When he throws that wreath at the bunny, he's like, that was a moment of great insanity.
I blew it. You nailed that. Thank you. Well, his first action on screen, like we have the song introducing Scrooge, and then he walks in the act one, and his first thing he does is throw out somebody asking for an extension on his
right.
Literally throw them out of his office.
With a stone face. So I just love that decision. Like he could have been rah, rah. Yeah. A bit of stone face. He just grabs them up and tosses that out. I love that scene. And then, of course, he's screaming like with just the most anger at those rats.
Threatening to make all the rats that work for him unemployed.
Loved it. So, but here's what just signified to me that Michael Caine was really going for it. Because with the utmost sincerity and talking to the ghost of Christmas past, this is his line, Michael. And this man does it in an Oscar reel scene. This is Fozziwig's old rubber chicken factory.
Yes.
This man said that with a straight face, with longing and sincerity
point.
In his heart.
That's a really good point.
I can't believe he got this done in a dramatic way. So, again, the comic personas mixed into this. I mean, these
How
puppeteers are funny. They're improvising a lot too, Michael.
Oh, the puppets are hysterical, and I think that's what allowed Caine to go, like, Caine had to be fearless in his choice to, like, yeah, I'm going to play it like it's a straight Victorian scene, but I'm also going to go, like, I'm not letting up. I'm going to be evil until I need to stop being evil.
Right.
And, like, he goes hard, leans into the, like, nobody wants to hang out with this dude-ness
sure.
of Scrooge.
Can you imagine if it wasn't funny, if it was, like, the Happy Time Murders right. non-funny? This movie
would... He'd be, like, terrifying.
Right.
And I think that's, like, I wonder how much improvisation, because that's an easy word for me to say, happened as a result of how serious he was, because it's
he
not...
He was a straight man. It, right. The old not Hollywood
as if, It's not
trope.
As if the Muppets needed to go above and beyond, but they were so funny. Or maybe they were just regular funny and it seemed funnier because of how straight-laced he was. I don't know what the ebb and flow was of those two in the give and take, but it worked. It created this actual magic. Even in the scene where he's yelling at the rats and their response is just like, all right, well, back to work. Here we go. you're laughing.
Love the rats in this whole movie. I loved Rizzo, loved all the other little rats, but I tell you, Gonzo might have stolen the show with him and Rizzo.
Oh, they're awesome.
Two-man
they're
awesome. Team. They're hysterical. And Gonzo's making his chicken jokes and the goose jokes
yes.
involved too. So I want to talk about that in spoilers, Mike, because I forgot going into this movie, like what the deal was with Gonzo and chickens. Like he's in love with chickens.
Yes.
So
yes. Which is a meta this joke. So like funny. You only know that if you watch or were raised on like the
yeah.
Muppets.
But I love the puppeteering here. I'm in awe of them after the making of. And the Ghosts of Christmas, just the personalities that they have are fun too. I mean, you have this potentially Grim Reaper, could have been totally scary, but he actually nods and he gives Scrooge some, you know, some outlets. And then there's, of course, the big Santa Claus Ghost of Christmas present
I
there.
I want to hang out with that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
I loved him.
He could sing. He's got the best song.
Come and get to know me, better boy.
Yeah. So in terms of some script thoughts, we're going to break this plot down in spoilers, but I just want to say here, the songs make good narrative sense. And this is how you write a musical. Because, yes, there's...
It's crazy that Disney figured it out, huh?
There's an exposition song at the beginning of the movie describing and singing about Scrooge. Other than that, they're singing about themes, which is what all great Disney movies
great
do.
Point.
They sing about themes. They don't sing the plot like a lot of the new school musicals do. Cough, Dreamgirls. And so many bad musicals, in my opinion, that just really are just on the nose with instead of the dialogue or instead of the scene making, it's the music that just is too on the nose. It's too to the point. But this movie, like, they'll sing about the Christmas spirit in 12 different ways.
Right.
And then the Christmas spirits. But also you have all the songs filled with jokes and one-liners
mm-hmm.
and anecdotes from the side Muppet characters. I loved it so much. They really did a great job with the musical aspect of it. In terms of an Oscar lens, Mike, here, and yes, there is an Oscar lens for my final thoughts. Production design could have been, should have been, maybe. I don't know. I have to look at the other nominees in that category.
Well,
but that
they're right here.
Okay.
Art direction was one. It was called art direction, production
Just
design
stick
at the time.
Just to the
but,
same name, goddamn
yeah.
it.
Howard's End won it. Bram Stoker's yeah. Dracula, Chaplin,
yeah.
Toys, and Unforgiven. This was the big Unforgiven year.
Okay.
Those were the nominees.
Well, Unforgiven's just like a landscape
It's still an old Western town.
If Unforgiven gets a nomination for production design, the writer should get one for this year.
All right. Right. Fair enough.
All right. But this production design is legit. I also want to say, you know, we've seen worse Best Original Songs nominated.
We have. I don't know. I have an opening for one, but we actually did a half-isode on this Best Original Song year. A Whole New World from Aladdin won it. Friend Like Me. I Have Nothing from The Bodyguard. Run to You from The Bodyguard. Beautiful Maria of My Soul.
Oh, was
the fifth entry, yeah, from the Mambo Kings.
Okay, never mind. That was a great Best Original Song category.
You like Beautiful Maria of My Soul?
I did. Yeah? I did, I still do.
I could put one of these over Beautiful Maria.
Okay, that makes sense. But no, that was a great year for Best Original Songs. I take it back. In terms of the costumes, hair and makeup, Michael, they are terrific. You have Muppets with hair on it, and I am not weirded out by a wig in this movie, by a hairline in this movie. They did a great job. Again, Disney's always good with that.
Agree. Made it look just like you think a Christmas Carol would, even though you're facing it on green frogs and pink pigs. It looked awesome. And, Bram Stoker's Dracula won it back in 1993.
Okay,
Enchanted April. Have you ever seen?
I haven't seen that one.
No, that was nominated. Howard's End again. Malcolm X, probably fair, and Toys again. Enchanted April, I don't know. Howard's End, I could see that being replaced too.
Well, no, Howard's End makes sense
it?
To me.
All right.
That's Anthony Hopkins, Emma Thompson.
Right.
Period drama makes a good sense. But they did a good job with this period drama and made and Muppetized it. So if you got points for creativity and Muppetizing it, then you should give this movie more credit. But again, like we said, visual effects, green screen technology used for Terminator freaking 2, Judgment Day, and the Muppet Christmas Carol in 1990s.
Only had three nominated for visual effects in 93 too. There was plenty of room to add this if they wanted to. Death Becomes Her 1, Alien 3,
okay. But good
was nominated
effects.
Yeah, whatever. Batman Returns was the other one nominated. About Aliens 3. Fincher's bitter about it, and I'm bitter about it.
Death Becomes Her won it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yes. This is a watch for me, though, in terms of...
Of course. Especially this season, December.
So happy
Get yourself ready for the Christmas season, the spirit. It's all about... You want movies that make you feel good this time of year,
right.
And this one absolutely does that.
And
whether it's on the backs of your familiarity with the Muppets or on the backs of the great, understatedly great performance by Kane in his turn... You'll find joy here.
I'm going to use my insufferable film critic voice now to say that this movie made me feel Christmas warmth and goodness and good cheer. And I'm very glad I watched it.
Fair enough. Let's spoil it now. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
This is the spoiler section for A Muppet's Christmas Carol. If you have not seen the movie, which isn't possible, I was the last person on earth that hadn't, so shame on you. But if you haven't, there's a good place to stop, go watch the movie, get in the Christmas spirit, come back. We'll be waiting for you when you get here. If you have seen the movie, if you just want to hear our thoughts on the twists and turns, or if you've been built up so much in the non-spoiler section that you can't handle going another second without hearing what happens with Michael Caine's Scrooge character, spoiler alert, he dies a gruesome death at the end of Act 2.
Gruesome.
Nobody saw it coming.
Gruesome, tortured to death by the
really,
Muppets.
I don't know how they got a G rating. This is where you want to be. It's all twists and turns. Spoilers for A Muppet's Christmas Carol from here on out. Mike, what are we starting with?
So I just kind of go through the plot here and through the one-liners that I liked. So, yes, if you haven't seen it, definitely see it first, then come back to us. But the first lines of the movie are funny. You got the two pigs. That was a fine meal. A wonderful meal. What should we do next? Let's have lunch.
Well, Ratzo repeats that joke later on. When he gets knocked out, he wakes up. He goes, "Is it dinner time yet?" And Gonzo goes, "No." He goes, "Oh, lunch then."
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. So you have the fruits. Help, help, I'm being sold. All these
Which brings up horrifying implications of the Muppets universe.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So these jokes are like edgy. I loved it. And then you have another character like out a window just like, "What about my nose?" Just like with a huge nose. So I'm laughing at this stupid stuff throughout the movie. But it also, you know, you have lines from the book. You have the Marleys were dead to begin with, as dead as a doornail. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's creepy and spooky when they want to be. And then they, you know, they have some shtick on top of that. So
nephew, you keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep keep it in mind.
Yes, grr. But Michael Caine, he cuts a terrifying figure as Ebenezer that Scrooge. Fucking, we said it.
I don't mean to swear. I'm sorry. I know it's the Muppets. I'll take that again. That gold tooth right. that he has in the is so menacing and just off-putting enough.
It is.
Yeah, that it adds so British much to his motif.
British teeth are scary. I agree. No, but most that's of them the have message. They have beautiful teeth in this movie. I noticed that this morning. And in Mary Poppins, by the way, we're going to probably maybe do that at some point.
Oh, but, we're doing it. We'll do
okay,
that
so we're point, doing yeah. that eventually.
Whether it's
come,
this
so,
week or not, yeah.
But look, these songs were great. Right? The first Scrooge song was great. Like I said, it got 150 different Muppets involved. So they're singing some things about his characterization. He's really a victim of fear and pride.
They soften you up. Yeah. It was such a weird roller coaster of emotions to start, and I wonder if anyone but the Muppets could have gotten away with this, because right. in the very first song, when they're expositioning the Scrooge character, they soften you up.
Sure.
And they give you that whole, you know, he's a sad guy, he's lonely, blah, blah, blah. And then they say, nah, just because he's got to start as a bad guy.
Right.
But, like, they prepare you to accept him as a good guy.
They talk as much about his loneliness and his lack of friends as right. they do about his meanness and showing his meanness.
And then he drops the hammer with sure. how much of a dick, I'm sorry, he is.
I mean, listen, The Silence of the Lambs used the same technique. I mean, with Hannibal Lecter, not born a monster, he was made one. I mean, the same thing. So, but dude, Gonzo.
What we're saying is this is, show your kids Silence of the Lambs.
This is the same yeah. storytelling technique.
If you
technique.
Just show your kids Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
Did you fuck me?
Oh, God.
Oh, no. We entered a dark place there.
Oh, immediately a dark place. Anyway, Gonzo wipes the window with Rizzo at the beginning of the movie. I was
hilarious.
Just laughing. I mean, thanks for making me a part of this.
Rizzo is great. Rizzo should be the narrator or the sidekick narrator to every movie.
Everything. He's hysterical. I love that Scrooge threw the man out. And then, you know, his facial expression when he throws the wreath at the bunny. I mean, I'm dying. And how much sympathy do you feel for that bunny in the newspaper out in the cold at night, in the snowy
shivering.
Night? Oh, my
shivering.
God.
Shivering. And they pan back to him later in just a one-off shot. And he's so cold and desolate. It's so sad.
Yeah. But also, the big jokes still play. Like, the jokes oh, I yeah. laughed at a lot when I was a kid. Like, the unemployed, heat wave, this is my island. That's hysterical. It's still funny. It's still funny. But Scrooge is also, you're given some hope for his character. Cratchit gets the day off, and they do get the day off at the end of the day. What's customary? The entire day? I mean, that's a good dramatic scene between Frog, Puppet, and Michael Caine.
That gave you hope for that character?
For Scrooge's character, because he does give him the day off.
Oh, wow. So you're one of those types that, like, the smallest bit of mercy from
the
merciless is...
mercy from the merciless. I read Game of Thrones. Gosh darn it.
All right. That's fine.
You would have been more trained for just the merciless mercy. Anyway, he does give him that entire day off. The song,
the proletariat isn't a bad thing.
The song of... Kermit and the Rats, you know, One More Sleep Till Christmas really works. Beautiful production design
everything
at the end of that.
Everything about the Kermit characters, Kermit's like, he's Bob Cratchit, everything about that character is just designed to manipulate your emotion.
Right.
To be like, I want him, he deserves every good thing in the world.
Yes.
He's
yes,
like
absolutely.
The eternal optimist that has to deal with a disabled son, and his disabled son has been raised to this point where he's grateful for everything, and Kermit himself, on a shitty Christmas morning, knows he's getting hosed professionally. But still is grateful to Mr. Scrooge for what he has.
That is the Cratchit character,
yes.
though, in every Christmas
game. It is.
So it makes sense to put the hero of the
franchise. And it makes
franchise.
Sense to have it be Kermit. Yeah, because Kermit is the Elmo of this world, right? He's
absolutely.
Like the face. He's the guy.
The
pre-Elmo
Big
kids.
Bird, yes. Yeah. He's the same.
Yeah. Right, yeah, there you go.
It reminds us.
God, how do you think Big Bird feels about being muscled out of his post
muscled
like that?
Out of his post. Miss Piggy should have taken over the Muppets. Maybe we'd have
been
good.
True, yeah.
She's hilarious in this. And
she's
of course
awesome.
She did not get a big enough role. Anyway, we have the, again, the little bunny sleeping. So we have an ominous nature to this, some commentary about
yeah,
the poverty. We also were reminded that the Marleys are rotting in their graves and then Rizzo, that's a scary line, but Rizzo's like, why are you whispering? You know, so again, you have the comic relief there at the end of the day here. The doorbell turns into the face of Jacob Marley. But you have it telegraphed because there's a big, you know, score, emotional
yeah,
moment with
so
the music.
So that's not creepy, but then they lean into the creepiness when Scrooge is alone.
The camera angles.
Oh, my God.
The
it's like a legitimate
angles.
Horror movie.
Yeah.
He's alone. Scrooge is hearing things happening in his house when he's sitting down, getting ready for bed. And obviously, of course, if you know the Christmas story, it's Jacob Marley is coming to visit him, except right. In this case, it's the Marley brothers, because goddamn, it'll be Statler and Waldorf until I die, at least.
But there were super low camera angles and then super high camera
creepy
angles.
Score, creepy yep. sounds. Michael Caine's face looks terrified.
That bell rings, freaks us out. And then, of course, the Marleys show up and they're laughing ghosts, which it deadens the horror. And
gleefully
the kids
are able, recounted. Yeah. Remember when we closed that orphanage? Oh!
Exactly. So that makes it okay. Yes. But we have the ghost of Christmas past, and it's a more of an awe-inspiring scene with the big white light than it is scary. So again, that's helpful to the story.
What's your least
kids
favorite
movie.
Ghost?
Probably the last one, because they could have really leaned into that last one, to use your phrase, like a George C. Scott version.
Okay.
You know,
I can see that.
That was much more horrifying.
I'm guessing Christmas Present is your favorite.
Christmas Present, I love the Christmas Present. But I like how they go back in time with this first ghost. They're flying through the air, which looked really great for 1992, going into the past, into the
and
white light.
And it's more filler scenes like that. Like, it's not necessary for that scene to happen to tell the Christmas Carol story, but the Muppets and Disney have that kind of technology at their disposal. They could shoot a great shot of Ebenezer Scrooge flying through the air with a ghost over the town. Why not do it?
And then you have a beautiful bunch of transitions with Scrooge as a child being lonely every Christmas, and then all those Christmases.
You're immediately buying into this poor guy.
And his teacher, the eagle guy, saying, that's why this is America or whatever. Yeah. And then Rizzo just whispers in his ear, it's not America. And he looks like, who the hell just told me that? It's just all the jokes are funny.
Magic, yeah.
You have them, hanging from Scrooge while they're flying and going into the trees. And then you have Rizzo being chased by a cat, all that stuff worked for me. I love the Fozziwigs, old rubber chicken factory thing, like I said. You have the animal and the band in there.
Hilarious.
Quiet! That's still funny, man. You have, of course, the Marleys heckling from their balcony in that scene.
I will say, I was surprised. Like, Scrooge is not given the deference of a nice guy for very long in this one, in the past.
Right.
Like, he meets his future wife, Belle. He falls in love, but like, there's one scene of them meeting, and the next scene, he's already gone back to worrying about money and the economy of it all, and I can't marry
it's
you
right,
yet.
Though. You have the Swedish chef, in that previous scene, so you know it must have been happening.
How much peyote did Jim Henson smoke to come up with these characters?
Wait till we get to Mary Poppins. Anyway, Rizzo is funny in there. Is it too early for breakfast? Yes. Oh, good. Dinner, supper time. Yeah. Come in and know me better, man. The ghost of Christmas Present comes after a very Oscar reel scene from Michael Caine crying behind that song with Belle. I should mention that. So that was a great scene. And you're literally sobbing, crying, and singing with that scene. But then you get the ghost of Christmas Present. No, come and know me better, man. It's a funny scene. And he's
did
large.
I already say that?
He's larger than life, literally.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Them walking through the streets, Mike, what made me laugh really hard was that stupid baby choir. And then the little baby gets smashed in the head, and his bottom lip goes like to his top of his forehead. That just killed me.
And there's so many little things like that that just happen. Yes. No consequence whatsoever to any plot or side story. It's just there to be there to make you laugh.
And of course, that's probably the best song in the movie, and it is the Season of the Spirit. It make it last all year. Yeah. What is that song called? I forget.
It doesn't matter. Your impression of it just killed it anyway.
But you see Cratchit's family and, of course, the heavy manipulation of the audience here. Again, from Dickens all the way through every version to this one. And you have Miss Piggy still kind of being the comic relief, her and her twins, daughters.
She's a badass character, man.
She's awesome.
She don't take no gruff.
No, she doesn't. She's eating the chestnuts. But she's also like mixing it up with Kermit at the dinner table there. I'm not toasting the Scrooge. F him, basically. So I love that fact, and there's a payoff later on with the big, I'm raising your salary line. I love how the spirit throws Scrooge's line back at him. You have a lot of setups and payoffs, and it's good screenwriting. But
I wonder if Charles Dickens tried putting this out in 2018,
right.
Wouldn't we all kill him for the Tiny Tim character? Like, it is so on-the-nose manipulative.
Oh, it is. It is. Always has been.
Right.
But they
of course,
and
it's
this
an
is
old
even,
standby. Yeah. This is worse now, yeah.
Exponentially without because question. Of Bless Us All.
Exactly.
I mean, they have a whole song
right.
Dedicated to Tiny Tim's character. Yeah, but it does work
of course
in the
works,
story.
Yeah.
And we have Christmas yet to come after, Christmas present ages. I like that little thing. He becomes a gray-bearded guy.
Right.
And Christmas Yet to Come could have been much scarier, but it's still kind of spooky.
So before we get to that point, I don't remember any other... I've seen like three or four other Christmas Carol iterations. I can't remember one where Scrooge was already so changed. Right. I thought he didn't change until after the third ghost and money of them. In this one, he's saying, I'm already such a changed man. Please don't leave me, Ghost of Christmas Present.
I can't remember other versions that well, but you're right. In this version, he definitely has, you know, warmed up to the Christmas
Present.
Yeah,
he's
present,
like, you could tell he's already, his demeanor, entire demeanor, just standing there has completely changed already. So that's kind of, I think, also alleviates the impact of the horror of the third ghost.
True.
Because he's already knows he's a defeated man, Scrooge is at this
right.
point.
He's got to hit his rock bottom, though, still, and he does that with those several right. scenes. And that's a creepy scene about his death and about how they're all selling his, the spider and the little lair there. They're all selling his stuff. And then you have, the pigs talking trash about him. And, of course, the scene without Tiny Tim in the house with, basically
so
Miss Piggy crying, Kermit crying. Yeah,
Tiny Tim's crutch just sitting there by itself next to the fireplace.
Oh my God, I want to cry now.
Terrible.
But you have...
These are cloth beings, by the way. These aren't real.
Beings, but that sequence goes fast, mercifully fast for the kids, because basically Scrooge does his big crying, plea to the spirit. He wakes up, instead of holding onto the spirit's cloth, the Grim Reaper's cloth, he's holding onto his curtains, and then... Happy music.
Falls to the bed, yeah.
Yeah, he reaches in. And then, of course, the biggest payoff of the most emotional, Muppet character that we felt most sorriest for, that little bunny boy. He is the boy that gets to do all the errands and get paid for it. He really takes under
so
his wing.
So you're right.
Here.
Every little setup that happened as a result of Scrooge's malfeasance, I guess, or mm-hmm. maleficence of in this movie is...
Malfeasance.
Yeah. Mal. I know words. It is paid off to a way. It's given you, it's set up evilly for a chance of a happy ending.
Yes, it
which
works
is
so well.
So good for a kids movie.
And The Love We Found's a great song, and Michael Caine's involved singing it. It's just terrific. And then you get it feels like Christmas over the credits there. I finally got that name right, I think. I hope. It works so well. If I was going to give this a grade, I would give it a high grade. It would have been a B+ for me. I mean, this is a really well put together story kids movie.
It's always tough to grade a great kids movie that's not like to the level of
true.
Of an unbelievable Oscar movie, because who's going to hate this? Like, why would you ding this
you
movie?
You can't hate this movie, right. Chicago Film Critics.
How dare you both?
What is wrong with you?
I got to try to reach out to them and just see if they would answer. It's 26 years later. They got to
Let's get
again.
Into a heated argument.
I just need to
on
know.
Film Twitter
I
with
need
Chicago
to know.
Film Twitter critics.
Who hurt you both? Yeah. Who hurt the two of you? Yeah, obviously high B all day, probably low A minus, depends on where you want to put
fun
it.
Fun movie.
Yeah, absolutely fun movie. I have a couple questions about the fallout,
though. Okay.
Why would the Cratchits believe Scrooge has changed?
Because
when he comes to the door? Like, why would they not think that him
saying...
Well,
they didn't, number one, but they also... He brings, like, a feast for them.
Okay, why would they not think that him saying, I'm going to raise your salary, doesn't mean he's going to give Bob Cratchit, like, 2 pence more per day? Or per month or whatever.
He's had a life of stinginess. Maybe that is what he's giving them, but at least he bought them Christmas dinner.
Aren't they more
He said he's going to pay the mortgage off their house. I remember that.
Yeah, line. So why wouldn't they think this is just one elaborate mean joke?
It could be. It could be. I want that to be the sequel. Start him off again as a mean guy, and then,
right.
you know, three more ghosts.
Right, because they weren't there for any of this. They, right. for, they were just living their life.
And then it's the revenge of Cratchit in the sequel. They never. It's a missed opportunity they've never done. I want to see it with Muppets too, by the way.
And like they're so ready to become, let him become a second father to Tiny Tim. This man has been killing your family.
True.
For years.
But he's paying their mortgage, and yeah.
You're a better Christian boy than I am. You're easily ready to forgive and forget.
I want to forgive him so hard from that opening exposition song. That opening exposition song manipulated me like Chloe Zhao said that Brady Jandro manipulated horses that manipulates audiences. Taking this full circle, previous Oscar Grant profiles. Yes, I am a sheep. I am a horse. I am an instinctual animal when it comes to movie manipulation, and this movie works on me.
And well, this movie is
still
just the height of manipulation.
It
does a great job.
1992, I was 8 years old. I'm 84. Can I do math? Yeah, 8 years old.
Yeah, 8.
And this movie worked on me then. It works on me now. I'm very happy about that.
It is. It's a great movie. It's a great kids movie. And it's one that I do think you could share with kids of any age that are in your life, niece, nephew, son, daughter, whatever. And I think they're going to get, you'll get just as much enjoyment out of them as they will. I honestly think so. I mean, this is a heartwarming tale.
The fun movie. If you're going to put one on for the kids,
right.
You know, this is a worthwhile
and
movie.
The George C. Scott one may be a little too heavy, too boring, too dry. This is a fine alternative.
Yeah, you don't have to watch SpongeBob Christmas every time or Frozen Christmas or whatever the hell your kids are watching these days.
Yeah, introduce them to some of the classics.
Oh, those Schmidio games or whatever they're playing. You can, watch The Muppet Christmas Carol.
There
might work.
We want to know your thoughts about The Muppets Christmas Carol as well, obviously. And was this something you grew up with? And if so, tell us about your memories about it. We'd love to hear it. We'll share you some of ours along the way as we keep doing these Christmas movies.
And if you don't like it, we'll rip you limb from limb, literally and metaphorically.
That's right. So
metaphorically.
Metaphorically, mostly. I got a bad back.
Unless you're a Muppet, then I'll go at you, bro.
You can reach out to us on any of our social medias, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MMN Oscar on Twitter, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available everywhere that you hear podcasts. We got some exciting stuff in the pipeline for you guys. Going to keep doing more OSPs, going to keep doing more Christmas movies. Got some maybe guests in the future, maybe some special people coming on, and we're going to mix it up with some other pods along the way. So stay tuned for all that. The website, for Christ's sake, it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, we kind of went back to zero on the website.
We had to hit the reset button because I'm not a smart man.
It's hard. It's just so hard.
Technology is
rough. But we're getting back at
it. We'll get there.
We've been working on it diligently. That means nothing to any of you.
No,
but we'll have a home base for you soon on the interweb. Or maybe that's a problem. I don't know what it's called.
But Mike, any final words of wisdom here?
Yeah, but keep listening to us. That's my words of wisdom for today, because we're pumping out Oscar race stuff with the Golden Globes coming out this week.
Sure.
At some point, we'll weigh in on that. We're going to weigh in on movie events, not just those events themselves, but in terms of the trailers, we'll have Marvel stuff for you soon. We got that MMO Weekly, which is cooking, and basically a ton of precursors. So the Oscar race update is going to be huge this coming week. We're also reviewing movies that we see that we can't, you know, dedicate a whole OSP retrospective to. So we've been watching a lot more movies lately. And bottom line is, you know, we want to be your one-stop shop for your, you know, movie podcast world. And let's create a movie podcast world, Michael.
Said very well. If you're a movie fan, welcome home. Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. We will check you out next time.
See ya.
I will hold you close in a thankful heart.